From the Haunted Attraction Network, I'm Philip. Today is Sunday, and this is not just your Halloween news briefing, but today we're bringing you all the news in theme park. From Scott Swenson and I, this is Green Tagged Theme Park in 30, with everything going on in theme park from the last week. Enjoy.
Welcome back to Green Tagged, everybody. My name is Scott Swenson, and I'm here with my co-host, Philip Hernandez. Hello, Philip.
Howdy, Scott. How are you?
I am doing very well. We have a ton of stuff to talk about this week. We have a ton of stuff. Now, there's been some big stories, there's been some little stories, and we're going to try to rush through as many of them as we can as I set my timer for 30 minutes, because as promised, we will deliver you theme park in 30 and the stuff that we think is important and of course, our opinions on it, because it's our show. That's the way it works.
Funny yes, and works. I am the disclaimer guy, so I'm going to put the disclaimer in that we had to record this early. So we are recording this on the 20th of October. And if something meteoric happens between, you know, we're not talking about it because we didn't think it was important. We are recording this on this day, and this is the news that's available on this day. So here we are. That's my disclaimer.
That's a great disclaimer because, you know, if something either monumental or catastrophic happens in the next 5 days, you know, we won't be talking about it. But if it's really catastrophic, you might not be listening. So there you go. How's that for a positive note, hey?
That's wonderful. Great. So let's start off with some trends here.
Let's go to the positive. Let's go to the positive.
So the first trend that we want to talk about is a little bit about, we're kind of grouping these all together, but the first one is sort of on the topic of attractions moving more towards a sustainability. So first one is Warner Brothers Abu Dhabi unveils a solar power project. Roughly 16,000 solar modules will be installed across the 36,000 square meter roof area of Warner Brothers World Abu Dhabi on Yas Island in the United Arab Emirates, following Emirates. an agreement between
It's okay.
So they The project is expected to be up and running for the fourth quarter of 2021 and generate almost 40% of the park's annual energy demand, which I thought was an eye-popping number, 40% of the park's annual energy demand. So I think this is a great idea, and let's go ahead and pair it with the Expo 2020 Dubai to galvanize global action in climate change, which this one just kind of previews a lineup of experts that's going to be at the Expo 2020 in Dubai, all about change makers and industry leaders talking about climate and biodiversity for their Climate and Biodiversity Week. So taken together, we see definitely a trend in the UAE area, but also a little bit about how attractions, I think, can get into this. And this isn't the first time we've heard about this. There are other attractions that are moving towards figuring out how to be more sustainable and reduce their footprint. And I think that it will be a continuing conversation that we're going to have with theme parks is the sustainability of them, especially as you look at bringing in younger audiences that are more, we've seen, you know, that's definitely a topic that's top of mind to them. And I think, theme parks, I think, also are generally targets for these types of things, you know, because we're not essential, quote unquote. You know, we are an entertainment space. It's like, do people want to be supporting entertainment that is not I don't know, carbon neutral or climate minded? So,
well, I have, you know me, I always want to know why. My first question is, why UAE? Why are they the most interested in this? And I think the answer is pretty obvious. It's tough to get power there. I mean, you know, solar is the most accessible. I mean, obviously, I know you're all saying, no, there's plenty of oil there. Yes, there is. But, you know, that's a finite, and solar power is not. So they're looking way ahead. And my second question is, why now? Why is it that now they're looking into something that could have saved them, you know, 40% of the park's annual energy demand for years gone by? I mean, solar power is not something that just magically appeared yesterday. So to me, it sounds like, and hopefully, and I'm singing their praises, I'm not being negative about it. Hopefully other parks will recognize, you know what, we've kicked the can down the road long enough on biting the bullet and investing in something that's going to save us in the long run. It kind of goes back to, you know, how do you prepare for a catastrophe? you always prepare for a catastrophe. You plan ahead so that, you know, when your supply chain, whether that be your supply of power or your supply of paper cups, dries up, you have another way around it. You have a detour that will get you what you need. And I think the idea of shifting to solar is super smart. It will reduce costs. It will make it so that parks, in the future, if there's another, you know, God forbid, another pandemic or another who knows what could happen in this world, where the attendance drops, well, they'll already have this incredible savings because their energy costs have dropped by 40%. So it's time to stop kicking the can down the road. And I congratulate the Warner Brothers Group and the folks in Dubai for at least, at the very least, paying attention to it, and at the very most, installing what they should have installed, you know, in the past. So kudos to them, and hopefully some of the American theme parks will dive on that bandwagon as well. So now let's go from kind of the sublime to the ridiculous. this was a very interesting story to me, and I think because I'm a very visual person, I think it was the visual images that frightened me even more than just the words. But more than 600 million people traveled to China during Golden Week. More than 637 million people traveled within China over the past week in celebration of the country's annual Golden Week, the country's government said on Friday. The government estimates domestic travelers generated about 466 billion yen or $68.6 billion in tourism revenue during the holiday period. And you may be thinking, oh my gosh, Scott, this is great. This is wonderful. Tourism is back in China and it's generating revenue, and we hope that spreads, until you see some of these photos. And they are photos of shoulder to shoulder crowds that go on as far as the eye can see. In, I believe one of them, is it downtown Shanghai? Where is that one? There's one that's like in a major metropolitan area. There's one along the Great Wall of China, which, for those of you who are watching the video, Philip just brought up. The train stations, the travel transport areas, literally shoulder to shoulder people, and very few of them wearing any sort of facial protection. There's some, but it's certainly not everyone. And I look at this and I think, you know, this is it's great that people have the confidence and the courage to start traveling again, but hopefully people are looking at it intelligently. You know, I'm about to travel as well, so I'm all about getting my appropriate facial protection and my alcohol wipes and all that sort of garbage. But to see these masses of people traveling, and traveling in a way that has been proven beyond a shadow of a doubt to help, you know, they're not even thinking about facial coverings. I don't think this is good news. I think this is terrifying.
Well, I think that it definitely is situational. And this is a situation where China is in a different state. So I will
different state. It's a different
next
country.
Story here. Right. It's a different country. Yes, yeah, a different country. It's a different country in so many ways. So I put in a different story here, which is the Chinese port city of Guangdao is under soft lockdown after a cluster of 13 COVID-19 cases was discovered last weekend. In the past 5 days, health authorities say they conducted more than 10 million coronavirus tests for all of the residents of that city. All of which came back negative after they quarantined those 13. Still, residents have been asked to remain at home. Flights to Beijing have been canceled, and travelers from Guangdao to other parts of China must quarantine. All 13 cases were tracked back to a hospital, they said on Friday. The 13 include 7 patients, 3 health workers, and a dock worker, and 2 people in close contact with the others. So I think it's a different situation entirely. So I agree partially that it is a little frightening, but I also think it's frightening because we, you know, in the U.S. are in a different phase of the pandemic than China is, and also look at, so basically they have this that, you know, they have a long-term system in place for tracking this. They discovered that one person was tested positive in a random screening, and so they moved immediately within 5 days to do 10 million tests, which is more than we do in a very long period. And then they quarantine those 13 people. They did contact tracing. They shut down flights. They moved in a way that is definitely only available to authoritarian countries, obviously, you know, but the swift and immediate action of this to kind of capture that, and only 13 cases. I mean, I'm like, oh, it's only 13 cases. So I do agree it is terrifying, but also it's a different situation. And I guess I'm wondering, the part we didn't hear in this story about the millions of people traveling, right, was what sort of tourism contingency plans did they put in place? You know, did they have plans for Golden Week? I don't know. They didn't say. They probably did.
Well, and they did mention that tourism was actually down for Golden Week, you know,
only down by 130 million.
Yeah, 100 and some million. Yeah, something like that. But so, you know, I think that was their caveat. I understand that, and I understand it is a different world. And you certainly understand, having traveled there significantly more than I have, because I've never been to China. So you have a much better comprehension of that. But I don't know. I look at it and I think, Even with the ability to just all of a sudden mandate, you know, you 10 million people are going to get tested, why would you even put yourself in that situation? Why would you even put yourself at risk like that?
Well,
and I think I just want to make sure that and maybe this is ugly American talking. Maybe this is me just saying we could never do that here. I get frustrated enough going to the grocery store. So just imagine being on the Great Wall of China, being shoulder to shoulder with another, you know, 2.5 million strangers.
I think that the reason that we're bringing it up is exactly your point of, you know, eventually this trend will get here to the US, and we will have to decide as amusement and attractions and tourism leaders, we're going to have to decide, you know, what the capacity are, that how we're going to return to this. You know, I think there's going to be a bridge at some point where we have to cross, where we're going to say we're going to go back to the way that it was, where some of these pictures, you know, I've been to Epcot every year for their big celebrations and their New Year's Eve, when they get to full closure in the middle of the afternoon. And, you know, I've been to Magic Kingdom at full closure. I've been to all these places, and just regularly, I'm a theme park nerd, and they look about the same to me. Like these pictures and how it looks on New Year's Eve at Epcot, you know, especially in the Chinese Pavilion with the like dragon with the flames and the RDM music. So we're going to have to decide at some point, you know, are we going to allow that to get back to where it is? And do our profit models work, you know, without that, if we decide to not go in that vein?
Well,
or not.
And I agree with you 100%. It does look a lot like a crowded theme park. But let me ask you this. Mm-hmm. Right now, today, would you go to Epcot with that kind of attendance?
Oh, gosh, no. I wouldn't. I wouldn't at all. But
I rest my case. That's exactly my point.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Well, 630 million people. Well, in China, apparently. And I don't know
absolutely.
If that's good or bad.
Well, and it's and again, I don't know whether it's good or bad either. And I think that's important to. I don't think people should stop traveling. I don't think we should shut everything down. I'm not suggesting that for a moment. What I am suggesting is that we need to continue to find ways to open safely. Because I completely agree that it's time to open back up. But I've also said it many times. Anybody expecting to go back to the old ways, the way things always were, you're going to be sorely disappointed, because that's never going to come. So, and if it does, it's going to come in another 10 to 15 years. So we'll see. We'll see. But, you know, on a positive note, and this next story is a great example of one of the things that I think is a positive turn to this. New hygiene standards for Hong Kong tourism businesses aimed at getting out the message that the city is safe to visit despite the COVID-19 pandemic. I'm going to summarize this, and Philip, you can probably summarize it in greater detail than I. But basically, this is the tourism board is basically setting hygiene standards, and the businesses can get recognized for meeting these hygiene standards. I mean, it's sort of like the good housekeeping seal. If you're an old guy like me, it's being recognized as we meet all these standards. We have a government agency that has reviewed that we meet all these standards, and therefore we are safe. To me, that makes far more sense than just opening the doors. Now, maybe these two run hand in hand. Maybe that's why there's, you know, more travel going on in other places in the world. But I would love to see something like this happening, certainly in the United States, because I don't see it happening in the United States. I see a lot of conflicting information and a lot of conflicting government intervention, both locally and state and federal. And so I would love it if we could get some sort of unified, here's the standard, and if you follow it, you get a gold star on your door that says, come on in, we're doing everything we can.
I agree. I also don't think they're mutually exclusive, I don't think that there's room for both. There's room for the strong government system or government support in some way to help with a large-scale contact tracing or outbreak contingency plan, as well as a tourism board coming up with long-term safety standards that are applicable to attractions. I think that there's room for both of these things. And I do love what they're doing. I also love that it's the Hong Kong Tourism Board here. It's not the local government, or, you know, it's with an association, but it's from an association of people that are tourism minded, that understand the specifics of the industry. It's not coming from people who don't. And that's what I like about it. And most of their changes are things we've already seen beaten into our heads over and over and over. The one that I thought was most interesting was that the rules include requiring restaurants to ensure enough ventilation to change their air 6 times per hour, or to go in and install a certain grade of HEPA filter to make sure it filters out virus particles. And they're looking at that for any indoor places, including inside theme parks. And I think those little details are interesting and really important. And I think that, again, having a unified marketing plan, so they can go and they can market it out to people and say, here are all the things that this restaurant we've checked that it has proper ventilation, it has safety, da 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 da. You know, it's just like back when I was in a hospitality program and you had to get ServSafe certified and you had to do all these, you know, you get your inspection notice, you know, but it's just an extension of that to include COVID. But I think that's brilliant because it's a consumer trust and marketing issue. So it's great. I love it.
Yeah, I love it too. I don't know whether I agree that there's room for all of it, simply because then there's no single standard. I think that we need to find something we can get behind and say, here is what the standard is. And again, maybe this is an American point of view because there's so much infighting back and forth. But I love the idea. I agree with you. I think it's a great idea that it is coming from the tourism industry, the tourism board, people who understand and have a vested interest in reopening and reopening safely, and staying open. I think that's probably the most important thing. And that's what hopefully this can drive too, is encouraging people to get that gold star so that it translates guests feeling safe into revenue. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's not just, well, we're doing this because we think we should. No, if somebody like me sees that you are certified by the Hong Kong Tourism Board, that you have met all of these, you know, restrictions, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, or recommendations, I'm more likely to book my travel there than the guy down the road who doesn't have that little sign on the door. Just my opinion.
So the next item here in our policy section is reopening guidance issued for attractions in India. So India has received reopening guidelines, and the government has granted permission for the parks to reopen. However, there is skepticism from the park operators saying they're not sure if when they reopen, there's going to be the amount of people that they need to really sustain it. And the quote here from the president of the association said that hardly 25 to 30% of attendance is there for restaurants in the local area. And so he's kind of attributing the restaurants to what they might see. And he's saying that people may not prioritize visiting entertainment parks amid the still raging pandemic, which calls back to what Scott said of basically the association is saying, we're going to open and we're happy that the government is giving us guidelines. We're just not sure it's going to do any good because people don't feel safe. And if they don't feel safe, they're not going to come to our entertainment venue.
It's what we were talking about earlier when we had parks operating, you know, parks in Florida, for example, operating under a specific percentage of attendance, and they wanted to expand that, but they weren't even meeting the restricted percentage prior to that. So was it necessary to expand it? And maybe, you know, each independent business owner in India and anywhere else for that matter is going to have to make their own choices. They're going to have to say, yeah, you know what, this is going to help us, or this is not. We just can't open because we're not going to get enough people in, even if we get up to 50% of attendance. You know, it and again, that goes back to create your business model so that you know what to do when your attendance drops to 50 to 25% of what you're used to. So yeah, I think it's an interesting quandary. It's like, which comes first, the chicken or the egg? Do we make it mm-hmm. safe, and do we make it so that everybody can return and tell everybody it's safe, or do we, and yet they don't, or do we convince everybody that it's safe so that they want to return? I mean, it sounds kind of like the same thing, but it's clearly not. And I think it's a real dilemma. I think the focus, in my opinion, the focus should be on finding standards, setting standards, and adhering to them.
Well, in that vein, let's jump down to our right-sizing and rediscovering your North Star section. And in the right-sizing section portion of this, we have Six Flags announced that they are doing a 10% reduction in the workforce, which amounts to 240 jobs. This is its full-time workforce, by the way, as part of the company's transformation, productively initiates program. More details will be revealed later in the month, and we'll pair that with Disneyland in California loses an estimated $2.2 billion in revenue. Disneyland Resort in Anaheim, California, has lost $2.2 billion from closures of hotels and theme parks during the coronavirus outbreak, costing the Southern California economy $5 billion, according to studies. Disney properties worldwide could take an additional $21 billion hit through 2022 if conditions persist. I'm not sure about that last line, because it's like, okay, if I don't think conditions are going to persist through 2022. I don't think that's something's going to happen at some point. Relatively,
yeah, soon. They could get better or worse. Persisting is you know, the only thing consistent is change. So
exactly,
it's and again, we're prognosticating based on very, very little past history information. So we have no idea. We have no idea what's going to happen. However, there are parks that are making some interesting choices and finding some interesting balances. And Philip, I know this is a story that's very near and dear to your heart, because this mm-hmm. is, I think, probably the park, let me put it this way, it's at least the park you talk about the most, if not your favorite park. I know you don't want to choose favorites, but it's the park you talk about an awful lot. And I know you have a lot of friends and connections affiliated with Ocean Park. So I'll let you kind of ramble into these, and then I'll come in and just kind of, you know, share my yes. 2 cents.
Okay. So continuing our right-sizing thing, the last two stories we have are both concerning the Hong Kong area, and specifically Ocean Park. And I think part of that is because Ocean Park is government-owned, and so all of its records are open to everybody. So there's more data about how the park is doing than Disneyland, who's kind of like, we're not going to tell anybody anything. Plus Disneyland was just slapped, as you remember last week, Hong Kong was, because they denied their bid for more land. So there's that. But so there we are, two stories here. The first story is on the business side of things, and it is basically like a business diagnostic about what the parks are doing. The second story is from a really intelligent fan who is talking about, from his perspective, what Ocean Park could do to pivot. And so we're pairing these together because they're just, it's like one is more of an insider view and the other one is like a fan talking about what they think, which sometimes are interesting discussions to talk about because the fans are outside of the world looking in. So in the first business story, who they quoted most was the former Ocean Park chairman, Alan Zeman. And he is no longer working with the park, but it's interesting, they didn't really get too many quotes from the park staff. As you know from listening to us they just switched over their executive team this year. So it is a new team, but Alan came in and kind of gave some quotes for this, because he was the one that kind of pivoted the park out of the SARS outbreak in 2000, three, which was Hong Kong was more hit by that than the US. But some of the good lines he has here is just closing the business kills the business, which we've talked about before on the show, but it's a great stance. And he said his magic trick was to roll out new events every 6 weeks, announcing them at exciting press conferences planned for maximum publicity. Sometimes he appeared as a jellyfish or a vampire, and it was a photo opportunity. The article does say the current chairman is making on staycations, which we already talked about previously on the show, and lower entry prices and new activities, such as the yoga, which we talked about last time. Despite the efforts being made by the two theme parks, the deputy chairman at the China Travel Service said it would prove a challenge to depend solely on local guests. He said the Ocean Park became less attractive to mainlanders after the Chim Long Ocean Park Kingdom opened in 2014. And then they brought in a professor from the Macau Institute for Tourism Studies, which said that slashing ticket prices was unavoidable, but that you should slash them, yes, but just be mindful that guests who get used to paying less would resist any return to higher prices, which is something we've heard drilled into us in the US forever. That professor also added that cutting prices, you might get the numbers, but more is not necessarily better. And that less crowded means less money, of course, so that will encourage acceleration of the use of technological solutions. Probably in the next generation of theme parks, they'll have to use technology to customize the experience, even if people have to pay extra. So that's the first chunk, is just the business side of it, and Alan and the other professors commenting on the business pivots. And in the opinion piece, this young guy says some really neat things. He says, Ocean Park Hong Kong needs to be rebranded and reshaped into a site that caters not just to those who relish nostalgia for the good old days of 1980s Hong Kong, but also a younger crowd, to artists and high-spending visitors looking for a boutique experience, and to tourists seeking an easy escape from Hong Kong's concrete jungle. And he gives some examples about, he does mention Halloween being important to their brand, and he mentions, let's see.
I love the fact that he talks about bringing in fledgling theater groups, mm-hmm. struggling to find permanent and affordable venues. It says, to a young person in Hong Kong, these are the tribes that best typify Hong Kong culture. I, as a theater guy, I love that. I love the mm-hmm. fact that they're looking at, and to be honest, it's something that we're exploring here in Florida as well. So at least certainly with some of my clients. So I think that is exactly the way to go. Again, I don't think it's necessarily a full rebranding. I don't think it's abandoning their North Star, which has always been to entertain and gather guests. I think it's finding new ways to do it based on the new world and based on the new culture. You know, one of the things that we learned, certainly here in the United States during 9/11, was you have to have a balance between tourism customers and local customers. And, mm-hmm. you know, I think the idea of the festival or the special event, is probably the most useful tool, because it lights a fuse under guests visiting your park, local guests especially, who will say, no, I'll get there eventually. Well, when you have a specific special event that is a limited time, it gets people off their tukuses and gets them out to the park. So I think that is exactly right. I think pairing more with the nonprofit world and pairing more with the cultural world of the city is super smart, and I give credit. I think that, again, redefining what a theme park is, and certainly not just what your theme park is, but what all theme parks are and what they can be. And the answer may not be the same for everybody. So I think it's important to recognize that the Wild West is opening up, and we need to redefine, continue our general North Star, just find a different pathway to do it. You know, I was talking to Philip before the show, and I said, if you come upon a road that is closed while you're driving, what do? You detour around it, but you still end up at your destination. And I think that's exactly what can and should be done. And these last two stories are very positive ways of looking at how this is happening. This is more in the hotel world than anything else, but Universal Music has now announced plans for three different hotels in Biloxi, in Atlanta, and Orlando that are music-based and giant concert venues. So here's the idea of basically saying, let's not go to the concert and then stay in a hotel. Let's watch the concert from our hotel, which I think is brilliant. It gives you the opportunity to control physical distancing. It gives you the opportunity to not just be one or the other. You're not just a hotel and you're not just a concert venue. You're both. So you can basically make your assets work in two different ways, which I think is super smart. And of course, the other one that I think every Disney file has been chomping at the bit, or certainly Star Wars file has been chomping at the bit, is Galactic Star Cruiser, which in essence is, I call it a two-day cruise in dry dock. But instead of going out in the ocean through technology, you actually go into outer space. And I mean, it's done to the level where each and every guest cabin has a window that looks out into outer space, something that they do very well on Disney Cruise Lines for internal cabins. So, and it's a two-day or two-night immersive experience that basically takes people out of large crowds and puts them into manageable, smaller ones. Again, it's redefining not only hotels, but themed experiences. It's taking two things that have similar interests and similar infrastructure and melding them together in a new and controllable way. And I really think that kind of pivot is what we need and what it's all about. And not just on the small level, but also on the really, really large level. Obviously, that was my timer going off, which means that we're going to end this 30 minutes on that very positive pivot from both Universal Music Hotels and the folks at Disney for Galactic Star Cruiser. I think we got everything in, Philip.
We did.
I'm shocked and amazed.
Shocked and amazed. Well, that's it for this week's show. I want to add, please give us a review. If you do listen to this in iTunes, please give us a review in iTunes. That does really help the show get ranked up there. And thank you to the three reviewers and two that left text reviews already. Those are wonderful. We love reading them. It gives us, it gives me at least a lot of good feelings.
That's right. And if you want to know more, go to greentagshow.com, where you can subscribe and you can find us on all platforms. So until next week, thanks for listening, and we'll see you in a week.
That was Green Tagged, Theme Park in 30, from Scott Swenson and I, and I hope you enjoyed it. Don't forget to please leave us a review and share this with a friend, won't you? If you have a friend that would enjoy only the Green Tagged series, they can subscribe at greentaggedshow.com. We'll be back tomorrow with our regular Halloween news briefing. Stay scary.
This is a Haunted Attraction Network production.